Welcome to the Love and Light Live podcast, empowering crystal lovers to learn and experience the art of crystal healing. Get ready to listen in and follow your soul calling with crystals. Hello, and thank you so much for joining me for the Love and Light Live podcast, the number one place for all things crystals. Brought to you by loveandlightschool.com. I'm your host, Ashley Levy, a podcaster, educator, best-selling crystal healing author, and fellow traveler on this extraordinary journey of self-discovery and healing with crystal energy. In today's show, we'll discuss divination with crystals. Specifically, we'll be talking about working with crystal balls, obsidian mirrors, and crystal bowls for intuitive scrying. But before we get started, I'd like to answer one of our listener questions. Remember, you can submit your own questions anytime at loveandlightschool.com/ask for the chance to have your question answered right here on the show. Today's question comes from Heidi. Heidi says, "Hi Ashley, longtime listener, first time asker. My question is about azestulite. My own research has been inconclusive as to what azestulite actually is. Some forums in more geologically focused communities seem to scoff at azestulite, saying it's just quartz, that someone slapped a trade name on so it could be sold at high prices. I acquired a piece of azestulite, purportedly, and I'm honestly not sure what to think. It's very clear with rough and irregular surfaces in what I would consider to be a blade shape with tapered ends. Some areas appear to have subtle striations. How can I tell if my piece of azestulite is genuine? And if it's a variety of quartz, what causes the irregular surface?" Heidi, thank you so much for asking this question. This is one I used to get asked about a lot more, and it seems like a lot of the hype around some of these trademark crystals has sort of tapered off a little bit over the past few years, but you are correct in that it is a trademarked stone. So I want to quickly explain there's a little difference between a trademarked name and a trade name. So a trademark name is an official name that someone has registered and filed a trademark for. In the case of azestulite, it is a trademarked stone. It's trademarked by Robert Simmons and Heaven and Earth Jewelry. Robert Simmons is the co-author of The Book of Stones, a very popular book about crystal healing, and he owns Heaven and Earth Jewelry Company. Now, a trade name, on the other hand, is just a name that's widely used in the trade. For example, the name angelite, that's a trade name. It's not the mineralogical name, but it's also not trademarked. Now, a trademark can also become a trade name when it's widely used, but in general, a trade name often more describes a specific locality or a specific formation of a mineral to sort of differentiate it from other occurrences of that mineral based on differences in its habit, pattern, color, or locality. So in the case of azestulite, this is a trademarked name. And from my past research, this is a trademark name that originally applied to a quartz that came from North Carolina in the United States. Since that time, there have been lots of other stones that seem to be mostly quartz-based, although some of them have lots of other stuff going on with them, that are also referred to as different varietals of azestulite, which again is a trademark name. So your mineralogical forums that you've been consulting are correct. On the one hand, it is just quartz and a fancy name that someone came up with for it. But if we are honoring that sort of original spirit of what that name applied to, then in this case, it was applying to quartz specifically from North Carolina. And I don't know much more about the precise locality of that original find of azestulite or that original pocket or claim or however you want to describe it. I don't know much more about the exact location, so I can't tell you precisely where it would have been from, but I've seen quite a bit of variety in the pieces of azestulite that I've seen. Now, here's something that's important. You asked about, you know, whether or not this is sort of real or authentic or genuine azestulite and how do you tell and that sort of thing. So technically, when someone owns a trademark on a mineral, they are the only ones allowed to sell it under that name. So even if someone else had some quartz from North Carolina, if they were not the trademark holder or they did not purchase it from the trademark holder, they wouldn't be allowed to sell it under the trademark name. And that's really important to know. So technically, especially legally, the only genuine, authentic azestulite would come from the trademark holder. And I believe, from what I remember, they at one time, and I'm not sure if they still do, came with these little certificates of authenticity. They were like a little folded card so that you knew that you had the genuine stuff. Now, there are definitely some folks out there selling kind of any type of quartz as azestulite because the azestulite is fetching much higher prices. And there are a number of people who are probably doing this without selling quartz that's even coming from that same locality. So that material definitely wouldn't be considered azestulite. But then there might be folks who are selling material that comes from the same area under the name azestulite, even though it didn't come from the seller. Now, energetically speaking, you are probably not going to find much difference in a quartz from North Carolina versus an authentic azestulite stone, if in fact that's definitely what the azestulite is. But then we also have to consider all the other varieties of this azestulite, which again are just quartz-based minerals that are coming from different parts of the world as well. Those seem to get a little bit more difficult to track down and trace their specific origin, what inclusions those quartz have. And I'm sure with some good sleuthing, you could probably figure it out. But if we're just focused on the original find of azestulite, the original stones that were sold under that name, then we would be looking, again, most likely at North Carolina quartz. So in terms of what causes the irregular surface, like I mentioned, I've seen a pretty big variety in what's on the market. Now, again, some of that has to do with the seller. If we have people other than the trademark holder selling the crystals, whether or not they're actually from that locality. So some of it, when we're seeing differences, comes down to the fact that that quartz actually came from somewhere else. However, I have seen a good deal of variety even among the pieces that are sold by the trademark holder, some being a little bit more transparent, some being a little bit cloudier and milkier. I've seen them really lightly tumbled or polished, where they've just had sort of rough chips and taken some of the rough edges off with a tumbler. I've seen some that are polished more into little slices or slabs with rounded edges. And I've seen some that are completely rough. So in terms of the sort of blade shape you described with the tapered ends and the subtle striations, it definitely sounds like you have a piece of quartz. Whether or not it's authentic azestulite depends on whether you purchased it from the trademark holder. But you could have also purchased some North Carolina quartz that would have a very similar energy. I personally don't love the practice of trademarking stones because I think it creates a lot of confusion in the market, and it's really hard to sort of get to the core information about what some of these stones actually are, where they come from, what their unique composition is, how they were formed geologically. And all that information is really important because it informs our understanding of the crystal and of the energy that it has. So I hope this has helped shed a little bit of light on those trade names versus trademark names, and specifically this trademarked stone, azestulite. I really appreciate your question, Heidi, and thank you so much for asking.
Discover how you can deepen your spiritual journey and follow your soul calling with crystals. The Love and Light School's award-winning crystal healing certification program opens soon. Go to crystalhealerschool.com.
And if you're listening and you have a question that you'd like me to answer for you about crystals or spirituality, or if you have a crystal story that you'd like me to share here on the podcast, you can submit your questions or share your crystal experience over at loveandlightschool.com/ask for the chance to be featured in an upcoming episode. I look forward to hearing from you soon. When you're working on developing your intuition, becoming familiar with how to use your crystals in different divination practices can be really helpful. That's why, in my Crystals for Intuitive Tarot course, I've shared practical techniques for working with crystal energy to discover the deeper wisdom of the tarot.
This course includes 15 in-depth lessons covering topics like an introduction to crystals and the tarot, crystals for setting the stage and creating sacred space for readings, crystals to ground and center you as the reader, crystals to call in the elements for magical support, crystals to awaken your intuition before a reading, wearing crystal jewelry as a personal talisman for intuition and communication, working with crystals to provide more depth to your card readings, incorporating crystals into your readings for others, creating your own crystal tarot set and tarot and crystal correspondences, working with your crystal tarot set, creating crystal essences for embodying the archetypal energies of the tarot, creating a crystal grid for tarot meditation, crystals to keep your cards clear and shielded between readings, the 10 best crystals for tarot readings, and a tarot spread for learning about the energy of a crystal. As crystal healers, it's important for us to continue to explore new ways to develop and tune into our intuition. Working with crystals in the tarot can help you gain the clarity and wisdom that you need to go even deeper with your readings. You'll learn more about all of this when you sign up for my Crystals for Intuitive Tarot course. Visit loveandlightschool.com/tarot, that's T-A-R-O-T, to learn more. Again, that's loveandlightschool.com/tarot. Don't forget to use promo code PODCASTFAN for $10 off your first class.
Now it's time to dive into our main topic for today, divination with crystals, working with crystal balls, obsidian mirrors, and crystal bowls for intuitive scrying. So we're going to cover a few things in this segment. We're going to start with what divination is and how scrying differs from divination. Then I'm going to be breaking down these three specific crystal scrying tools: crystal balls or spheres, obsidian mirrors, and stone bowls. And then I'll also be giving you some affordable substitutes for each. And I'll be sharing a quick practice on how you can work with these tools for scrying divination. So let's kick this off with a discussion of divination and scrying. Divination in general is the art of seeking knowledge and wisdom, getting in touch with your inner knowing or your intuition through the use of divination tools. And these divination tools can really run the gamut. So we have things like tarot and oracle cards, pendulums, stones, bones, runes, and other trinkets for casting, as well as scrying tools like we're going to discuss today. Scrying, on the other hand, kind of falls under the umbrella of divination. It's one form of divination, and it is a practice that can be done with a number of different mediums. So you can scry with fire, like in a candle flame. You can scry with crystal balls. You can scry with clouds. You can scry with water, and so many other methods. In this segment, though, we are going to focus on crystal scrying tools because that's what I'm all about. So working with these crystal scrying tools, so this can be any object made from crystal or stone that features a reflective surface or interior, like a clear quartz sphere, a black obsidian mirror. This is a great way to experience the art of crystal gazing to receive guidance and wisdom. Scrying, and really any type of divination, is a great way to help hone your intuition. So developing your intuition allows you to fill in gaps where you don't have all the information or data necessary to make the best possible decision or to take your next steps forward. That doesn't mean you should just kind of follow your intuition without a second thought or without any logic or reason, but by learning to trust your inner guidance and combining that intuitive insight with reason and logic, you have a far more practical approach than just following logic alone. Sometimes those gut feelings serve us really well. So one note before we start to dive into each of these tools: performing the art of scrying, or really any type of divination, takes patience and practice. So don't get discouraged. You might need to form a relationship with your crystal tools before you start to see or experience any meaningful symbols or images. So I'm going to share a few of my favorite crystal scrying tools and techniques to help you get started, but give each of these a chance. Try at least several sessions with each type of tool before you make up your mind about whether or not it's a good fit, because chances are this isn't going to be super easy the first time you try it. It might be, and that's great, but if it takes a little getting used to, that's okay. And if you want to see some of the tools that I'm going to talk about in this episode, I did a full, nearly a 1 hour long live on Facebook, and I've added that video to this week's blog post, so you can head over to loveandlightschool.com/blog so you can see examples of all of these different tools. And I've also posted the video on my YouTube channel. So let's start with talking about crystallomancy. This is scrying divination with crystal balls. So this is done to help you receive guidance and wisdom in the form of images that are revealed within the crystal sphere. The energy of the sphere shape in general represents wholeness and infinite possibilities, and spheres emit their energy, so they radiate their energy really uniformly in all directions. So it's sort of soft and gentle and a really easy tool to work with, especially if you're just starting out. Humans have been practicing the art of crystallomancy, which is sometimes just called crystal ball reading, for hundreds of years. So one of the most famous crystallomancers was John Dee, who was advisor to Queen Elizabeth I. John Dee practiced crystallomancy way back in the 16th century, but people still know him today for the wise counsel that he offered to Queen Elizabeth. He relied on his crystal scrying tools for their ability to reveal hidden truths and offer profound guidance, even to a British monarch. The British Museum, in fact, still displays John Dee's crystal ball and his other divination tools, including his obsidian scrying mirror, in the museum today. And if you want to see a picture of those, you can head over to this week's blog, because I actually have a photo that I took at the museum. So you can check those out there. So before you start working with a crystal ball for scrying, you need to select one. You need to choose one to work with. And a lot of people actually get hung up here, so I thought I would share a few tips for selecting your own crystal ball. When you're choosing a crystal ball to work with for scrying, now there are lots of reasons that you might work with a crystal sphere. You can use it as a massage tool. You can use it in a crystal grid. You can use it for lots of things, but specifically when we're talking about choosing one for scrying, it's important to select one that allows you to see sort of into its interior. You want to be able to see into the depths of the crystal. So quartz-based minerals like clear quartz, smoky quartz, amethyst typically work best for this, and they have the added benefit of being really great amplifiers of energy because they're quartz-based, so they let those symbols, messages, energies come through really loud and clear during your scrying session. But there are also a lot of other suitable sort of transparent stones available, like calcites or fluorites, that might be a little bit more affordable than quartz-based minerals. These transparent to translucent stones basically just let you gaze into the crystal to explore its inner landscape, looking for symbols and images in the stone's fissures and fractures and inclusions. So you're actually sort of letting your eyes soften and pass over that inner landscape of the stone to pull out any symbols that you see. So having these transparent stones that let you look into the interior of the crystal is really important for this. On the flip side, really opaque stones, which just means you can't see into them, like jaspers, aren't typically recommended for scrying because they really limit your gaze to just the surface of the stone. And that makes sense, right? You can't see inside a jasper. You can only see what's on the surface. One common exception to this, however, is black obsidian, which we're going to talk about in our obsidian mirrors section. But black obsidian spheres are commonly used for scrying because they have this really glassy reflective surface that allows you to scry using the exterior surface of the stone rather than the interior of the crystal. And we're going to talk about obsidian in a little bit more detail in the next section. But just to sort of recap this and give you an example, there's going to be a pretty big difference in attempting to scry with an opaque stone, say like an unakite, compared to one that's transparent like an ametrine. And in the video that I did that's added to this week's blog post, you can actually see these side by side, so you see exactly what I'm talking about. Ametrine's transparency will really let you view into the crystal, into the depths of the crystal, where unakite only lets you view the surface of the stone, which makes scrying really difficult, particularly for a beginner and, you know, dare I say, like pretty impossible. I mean, you could definitely try and, you know, maybe a really experienced scryer could get sort of the same result. I would have definitely a super hard time working with an opaque stone for this practice, though. Now, I also want to say here that you really need to be aware of what you're purchasing when you're looking for a crystal ball, because there are a lot of commercially available crystal balls that are actually just glass. Sometimes sellers market these under the name reconstituted quartz. Sometimes they're even called natural reconstituted quartz, which, let me tell you, doesn't exist. And these quote unquote crystal balls are flawlessly clear, and they're not crystal at all. They're actually just glass. And what's really confusing about this is this type of crystal ball, this perfectly clear large crystal ball, it's almost what may most evoke what we would expect a crystal ball to look like, right? A lot of times our perception of some of these tools is really informed by appearances in pop culture. So, you know, in everything from feature films to comic strips to memes, we often see the picture of the fortune teller with the crystal ball, and it's always this flawlessly clear crystal ball. And so there's this perception or misconception that this is what our crystal ball should look like. But this type of flawless sphere is not recommended for scrying. First, because these are not made from natural crystal. These are just glass, so they don't possess the same energy as natural crystal. Second, these flawless spheres are actually really hard to use for scrying. The flawless spheres, whether they are natural quartz or not, they lack the internal imperfections that create that backdrop for our intuition and our subconscious to project the symbols and images onto. So it's having that natural crystal ball with some character and all those internal inclusions that's actually preferred for scrying, because it gives us something to gaze at. It gives us something to sort of pore over with our eyes and find these hidden symbols and images. So I will say, quartz crystal balls can be fairly expensive, and even if you are going with one of the slightly more affordable substitutes, like a calcite, a fluorite, something like that, they can still be a little bit pricey. So although these are one of the most common tools for scrying, there are some affordable alternatives if this is not in your budget. So you can work with just a small tumbled stone. Tumbled stones are usually a lot more affordable because they don't have to be polished into that perfect sphere shape. But just about any other transparent or translucent crystal that you feel drawn to, like a polished dome shape, a palm stone, the back of the head on a crystal skull, can all still work for crystal gazing. So if you have one of these in your toolkit and you don't have a crystal ball, you don't necessarily have to go out and get one to practice scrying. Just be sure to follow some similar guidelines for choosing your stone, like selecting one that's transparent and that you can easily gaze into, and you'll be in good shape. Keep in mind, you know, the smaller your stone, the smaller the surface you have to sort of gaze into, so it can make it a little bit more challenging, but it is still definitely possible. There's also another great, super affordable substitute, and these are called sear stones. They're also sold under the name riverbed quartz, dragon's eggs, or emu eggs. These are really interesting. They come in, you know, from the size of a regular small tumbled stone to sort of a jumbo palm stone size. And these are put through a pretty interesting process in order to take shape. So first, they take rough pieces of stone, they lightly tumble them to remove any like rough or jagged edges, form a generally rounded, smooth shape, not necessarily round like a sphere, but just sort of smoothed out. And then once the stone's smoothed, they sandblast the outside, which gives it this foggy appearance, almost has a texture somewhat like sandpaper. And it's really, really cloudy, right? So you can't really see into it. But then they take just part of the stone. Sometimes they cut them right in half. Sometimes they just cut a little piece off. But they do this big, wide slice across one side of the stone. And then they polish that with a really, really high polish so that the surface, the cut surface, has a smooth, shiny appearance. And this results in a window-like face that you can gaze into. And what's really interesting is as you're gazing into that window-like face, that cut area that's been polished really fine, the sandblasted exterior of the stone, you can actually see through the cut face, and then that rough outer surface creates like a backdrop to the window. So it lets you gaze into the stone without being able to see through it, which can be really helpful for beginners because your vision stays trapped within the interior of that seer stone. And these are super affordable, readily available from most crystal shops and even a lot of sort of like tourist shops like you would see in a museum store or something like that. And you can usually find them for less than $5. Now I do have a classic blog post called How to Perform a Crystal Ball Reading Step by Step. I've linked to that post in this week's blog. So again, if you head over to loveandlightschool.com/blog, you will find this week's article with all these scrying tools, and I'll have a link to those steps to performing your own crystal ball reading. I will go through sort of a condensed miniature version of how to do scrying with any of the tools that we talked about today at the end of this episode. But if you want really specific in-depth steps for that crystal ball reading, definitely check out that classic post. Next, I want to chat about scrying divination with obsidian mirrors. So these obsidian mirrors are made by polishing thin slices of obsidian into these mirror-like discs. So they're pretty much always round, perfectly round circles, and usually about, I don't know, maybe a little less than a half an inch thick, maybe a little more than a quarter inch. And they serve as really potent scrying tools. They have these super glassy reflective surfaces, and obsidian is said to provide a gateway to the realm of the subconscious. So these mirrors give you the ability to do a lot of inner work, to look at yourself, reflect on yourself, so you're better able to see your life path, your behavior, your identity, which can be really useful for shadow work and divination about your personal journey. Obsidian mirrors have also been sort of connected to the underworld and the spiritual realm. And it seems like over the last few years, they've gotten really popular. And I've sort of started to see them pop up in a lot of places for sale. They range sort of from about 2 inches in diameter up to about 12 inches in diameter. The big ones get pretty expensive, but these are really old tools. So even though these are manufactured by modern manufacturing, this type of tool has been used for a long time for scrying divination. So remember earlier I mentioned John Dee, that spiritual advisor to Queen Elizabeth I, the famous crystallomancer. He worked with one of these mirrors in his scrying practice to communicate with otherworldly entities and to gain these insights to give guidance to the queen. So by gazing into obsidian mirrors, you can receive messages from your intuition, your guides, and your ancestors as part of your crystal scrying practice. But these can be pretty expensive, so I wanted to give you some affordable alternatives to obsidian mirrors. So many modern diviners actually use black mirrors as a tool in their scrying practice for divination. I see these used by a lot of modern pagans as part of their divination practice. And these are just regular glass mirrors that have a black coating behind the glass as opposed to a traditional regular mirror that has a metallic silver coating. People use these basically in the same way that they use obsidian mirrors. Obviously, crystal practitioners generally prefer obsidian mirrors for crystal healing and divination because they're a natural stone, but black glass mirrors offer a much more affordable option that might be more accessible to folks financially. So if this is something that you want to try, there are even lots of tutorials online for how to create your own black mirror for scrying divination. But if you're like me and you want to stick with natural stones rather than glass mirrors for your work in divination, you can try working with a black obsidian tumbled stone or palm stone or even a small black obsidian sphere. These will all work really well as a scrying tool, and they're typically much more affordable than the round disc-shaped mirrors. And that brings us to our final crystal scrying tool, crystal bowls. So artisans carve some stones into bowl shapes, which makes them suitable for scrying when they're filled with a little bit of water. So a dark-colored, relatively flat basin seems to work best for this. So if you think of like the energetic properties that your crystal bowl carries with it, based on the type of stone that it's made from, you know, consider how this will influence your scrying work. You might want to choose a stone bowl that's carved from a crystal that boosts your intuition or enhances your divination practice, or that even sort of facilitates a bit of mental clarity, because this added energetic quality can be really helpful during your divination practice. But these stone bowls, again, can be really expensive. I had a tiny one. It was maybe like 2.5 inches across. It was made of moss agate, and I think it was around $50. These finely crafted bowls usually have a pretty high price tag, especially when they're made of really exceptional quality stone or when they're really fine carvings. So they'll often carve them super thin, which always makes me a little nervous because I really like doing this water basin scrying or these stone bowl scrying outside, and I am always so nervous I'm going to drop my bowl. So I have found that black steatite, which is black soapstone, is really affordable and it's much more readily available than other carved stone bowls, and I really like using this for my divination practice with crystals. So you just take that stone bowl, fill it with a bit of water, gaze into it, and there are some really nice ones made of black soapstone that basically seem like they were made for scrying. They're nice and wide and shallow, not too big, not too heavy, but still nice and thick, so you don't have to worry about breaking them. Now, if this still isn't accessible to you financially, I want to share a super budget tip that lets you perform this water bowl scrying with any bowl. So you can pick literally any bowl of your choice. You can go grab one out of your kitchen. Again, I find it helpful if it's sort of dark in color, but even if you have just like a clear glass Pyrex bowl or something like that, you can nestle it into a dark cloth, like a dark background, and that works great too. So pick any bowl of your choice, and you might be thinking, well, Ashley, how on earth is this crystal scrying then? Well, to bring the crystal energy into this scrying practice, you can actually just use a few drops of a prepared gem water or crystal elixir dropped into your bowl of water, or you can just fill the whole thing with the gem water if you want, and it adds a bit more magic to the practice. So instead of ingesting an elixir or gem water like you usually would, you're going to use it in your scrying bowl, sort of like a magical brew, to create this energy-infused scrying water, which lets you transform any bowl or vessel into a crystal scrying tool, because you're bringing that crystal energy in the water itself. And I have two more important links for you about this over on this week's blog. Again, head over to loveandlightschool.com. I have a link to an article called How to Create Crystal Elixirs Safely, which most of the information in that article you won't have to really worry about for this exercise because you're not going to be ingesting the gem waters. But what is important is there's step-by-step instructions for creating your own elixir there. So if you wanted to custom make your own scrying water that you used in your crystal bowl or in a regular bowl, you can just follow those instructions to creating your own gem water and then use that in your bowl. And I've also included a link to an article that I wrote a couple years ago called A Crystal Elixir Recipe for Shadow Work and How to Use It for Scrying Divination. So this goes through sort of that exact practice of adding a crystal elixir to your scrying bowl and using it for divination. And there's even a really cool bonus in this article, this classic article, that if you're having trouble with this water basin scrying, you can perform a really cool wax scrying technique by dripping wax into your scrying bowl. So I won't like give away everything, but the link to that article is in this week's blog post. So you can check that out to walk through the step-by-steps of how to do the scrying with your water bowl using that crystal elixir. And then if you want those extra steps about how to do wax scrying, you can check out that classic post. So tons of amazing information in this week's blog, but now I want to kind of bring this all together and tell you just a really simple technique for how to scry with your crystal divination tools. Now remember, I do have that link that I mentioned earlier to how to perform a crystal ball reading step-by-step, how to do crystal ball scrying, and then that one for scrying with crystal bowl or crystal water basin as well, which, you know, the steps might vary just a little bit, but to sort of just give you a basic rundown for any type of crystal scrying, here are the steps. It's always good to start in a space with some dimmer light, nice low light, not like pitch black, not like you can't see your hand in front of your face, but just making sure that the light is a little bit low and that you're feeling really calm, peaceful, tranquil, and that there's not a really bright light source that's going to sort of get in the way or stand out in your field of vision. It's great to have a small source of light, like a candle, in a safe place, of course, or a little night light, even like a Himalayan salt lamp, something like that. Just having that light source off to one side where it won't interrupt your field of vision. Then you're going to go through your grounding and centering practice like you would for any type of divination and gaze into your crystal tool, whether that's your crystal sphere, your obsidian mirror, your crystal bowl, a palm stone, the back of a crystal skull, anything like that. And just allow your eyes to go in and out of focus. The key here is to sort of soften your gaze, almost like you're doing a magic eye puzzle, if you've ever done one of those. So just get into that place where you let your vision go a little bit soft and blurry, and then gaze at that crystal tool. And I find it sometimes helps to get things started if I sort of pick up that tool and just really slowly move it sort of back and forth, turn it in different directions to see if any areas sort of pop out. Just that movement sometimes, that play in the light, lets me start to see things. And so just let yourself experience any images or symbols that appear within your crystal tool. And when you feel like you've received all the information that you've needed, take a deep breath, you know, let yourself sort of come back to the present moment, extinguish your candle, and then try to interpret some of those meanings of the images or the symbols that were presented to you. And I find it really helpful to write some notes down in my crystal journal about these images, these symbols, the experience in general, what I think their meaning was. So I do have a list of journal questions for you, some reflection questions on the blog this week so that you can sort of keep track of what your experience was like, what tool you were using, and make notes not just of the experience, but how you felt about the experience. Because I found when it comes to any type of divination work, that's often just as important to the interpretation as everything else. So that's just as important. And I sort of want to leave you with this about scrying. I think it's really important when you're practicing scrying to know that, you know, we're really engaging our eyes in this practice, and it's primarily a visual practice, but we all experience and receive energy in different ways. So sometimes, even though we're engaging with our eyes, that information or knowledge or wisdom or those messages might come through to us in a different way. So even though this is primarily visual, if you're more clairaudient, even though you're engaged visually, you're practicing scrying with your eyes, you may experience or receive the answers or messages that come through for you clairaudiently. Maybe you hear them, or maybe you're more claircognizant and you have more inner knowing. There's no right or wrong way to experience or receive the energy that comes through. So just be open to whatever does come through for you, even if it's in an unexpected way.
Do you feel intuitively called to work more deeply with your stones? To grow your confidence, knowledge, and connection to crystal energy beyond what you can learn on your own? Our award-winning Crystal Healing Certification Program will take you from crystal lover to a confident, certified crystal healer and help you discover your soul's path and crystal purpose. Go to crystalhealerschool.com to learn more.
So even though this scrying practice is just one type of divination, there are so many different divinatory practices that you can explore to enhance your intuition. And I think developing your intuition is a really important step to deepening your connection with your crystals and to the world around you, because when you're tuned in intuitively, you're receiving those messages from the universe so that you can act upon that guidance. It's a really important tool for helping you just navigate the waters of life, because whether you need to make a decision or get more information for your healing work or your spiritual practice, or you just need that little help, that extra boost in your confidence to sort of trust your gut in a given situation, your intuition plays a big role in how you interact with the world around you. And I think that intuitive development is such an important part of crystal work that intuition is one of the three key pillars in my crystal immersion method. So this is the method of teaching that I base all of my courses on here at the Love and Light School. And the pillars are intuition, compassion, and confidence. I think we need all three of these to be really successful with our crystal work. And intuitive development is such a big piece of this that I have an entire class dedicated to developing your intuition in my Crystal Healing Certification Program. So if you'd like to learn more about that, if you enjoyed this talk about scrying tools, head over to crystalhealerschool.com to get notified once enrollment opens for the program. So whether you prefer working with crystal scrying tools, like the ones we just discussed, or some other form of crystal divination like pendulum dowsing or stone casting, just know that the practice is a little bit different for each and every one of us in our interactions with our crystals. So when you're learning how to sort of tune in, or you're trying to rekindle your crystal connection, becoming familiar with these different ways of working with crystal energy can be such a big help for forming that relationship. And that's why I've dedicated that whole lesson within the CCH program to covering a broad range of crystal divination methods to help you build your intuitive skills, because this is about a lot more than just scrying. In addition to scrying, we cover things like crystal cardomancy, so working with tarot and oracle cards, lithomancy, which is also called stone casting, and pendulum work. Plus, we have lots of advanced techniques for using crystals as part of your intuitive practice in my advanced program. So again, if you want to get all the details about that and get notified as soon as our early bird enrollment opens, just head over to crystalhealerschool.com to get on the waitlist. I'll send you an amazing sample class from the program all about creating crystal grids. I'll also send you a syllabus for my CCH program and for the advanced program, so you can see all the classes that are included and lots of other details about how it all works. And again, if you want to go a little bit more in depth with everything that I talked about this week, you can head over to loveandlightschool.com/blog to check out all those extra links, see this week's video, some pictures, and some other cool things that just really help illustrate these tools and how to work with them. Well, that is it for today. I hope you enjoyed listening and that you learned a lot from today's show about crystal scrying. And I just want to say thank you so much for tuning in. If this discussion today sparked any questions, ideas, memories of your own crystal experiences, I would love to hear from you. So you can submit your questions or share your crystal story with me over at loveandlightschool.com/ask. And if you enjoyed the show today, the biggest compliment you can give me is to leave a super quick 5-star rating and a review on your favorite podcast platform, or share a link with a fellow crystal lover. So I recently did a survey to find out where folks are most listening to the show, and it looked like our biggest platform was on Spotify, but there are also quite a lot of you listening on Apple Podcasts, Audible, Podbean, Stitcher. So thank you so much, no matter where you're listening. And if you're not yet subscribed, be sure to head over to loveandlightschool.com/listen, where you can find our most popular episodes, most recent episodes, and some links to those popular platforms where you can subscribe so you never miss a future episode of the show. And if you are ready to dive deeper with your crystals and take the next steps on your journey, I would be absolutely honored to be your guide. So head over to crystalhealerschool.com to learn more about how you can become a certified crystal healer. I would absolutely love to see you in class. That brings us to the end of this week's episode of the Love and Light Live podcast. I'm your host, Ashley Levy, and I'll be back with you next time. Until then, crystal blessings. The Love and Light Live podcast is a production of the Love and Light School of Crystal Therapy. Connect with us online at loveandlightschool.com or on social at Love and Light School. The content provided on or through our website or podcast makes no claims for specific or general health or health results and should not be used to examine, diagnose, or treat any medical condition, prescribe medications, make claims for specific or general healing or health results, or as a substitute for traditional medical treatment. For medical advice, you should consult a licensed healthcare specialist. For more information, please refer to the terms of use on our website at loveandlightschool.com.